You're listening to AvWeb's audio coverage of AirVenture 2018. AvWeb.com, world's premier independent aviation news resource.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from AirVenture 2018 in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. You know, you've been hearing a lot about electric airplanes, and one of the leaders, well, not one of the leaders, the leader in electric aircraft that you can actually buy is Pipistrel. They're based in Slovenia. And I'm with Michael Coates of Pipistrel U.S., and Michael, you've been placing some airplanes in the U.S. There are six of them out in California. They're flying. Tell us what the current state of approval is for the use of those airplanes and where it's going.
Okay, in the U.S., the aircraft are currently registered in the experimental category because the U.S. has a different definition of an LSA aircraft to the rest of the world. In countries like Australia, South Africa, New Zealand, we can register them as LSA aircraft. In the US, they're registered as experimental, and most of them are operating with an exemption which allows them to be used just like an LSA aircraft, provided they're maintained and operated as an LSA. They can be used for training until the rule is changed, because the FAA have already advised that the rule has changed as far as they're concerned. They're just waiting to go through the government process of getting published.
And the rule, as I understand it from covering this, is that we have to get a definition sorted out of what an electric airplane is and how it fits into the definition of an airplane in a life sport.
Well, it's not so much the change there, but what happened when they made these rules more than 10 years ago. Somebody popped up and said, oh, we're going to end up with turbines as LSA aircraft. And that wasn't the intention of the FAA in having the LSA category. The idea was to have simple, easy-to-operate aircraft that had all the benefits of no medical. And they inadvertently put in there at the time that an LSA aircraft must have a single engine, so it can't be a twin or anything else. And to avoid turbines, they put the word reciprocating, which means it must be gasoline powered. And that at the time was accepted, but they didn't think that electric technology would increase its reach so quickly. And they inadvertently ruled out electric aircraft because that one single word, reciprocating, and that's what they've changed. And that's really good for electric aircraft, and it will spur on a lot more development and new aircraft release.
Has that change hasn't occurred or is about to?
The change has already been signed off by the FAA, but it has to go through the government process of being published and so forth before it becomes a law. We can't do anything about it until it becomes a law, but the FAA themselves says, yes, we have accepted the electric aircraft standards which are produced by the ASTM, and yes, we have a history of safe operation of electric aircraft. We can see that from here with the experimentals and around the rest of the world. And, we're happy to give electric a go. So we'll change the rules.
So just so I'm clear on what's going on in California, under the exemption, they're able to use those airplanes just as they would any LSA.
Correct.
Which means they can do training and so forth.
Yeah. It's easier for them than it would be for an individual because the aircraft are government-owned. So they can pretty much do what they want with them.
Who's the government?
Well, there's cities. Cities of Reedley, City of Mendota, tomorrow's Aeronautical Museum. So they're entities rather than individuals. So it makes it a lot easier for the process to get exemptions because it's a city, a government group applying for the exemptions.
Now, the last time I was in Slovenia looking at these, Tina Tomasek and I talked about battery capacity improvements. It's crawling. Doesn't seem like it's going to start running. So now you're using some innovative approaches to increase the speed at which these things can be charged, one of which is water cooling. Tell us about that.
Right. Basically, we're the first aircraft that can charge quicker than it can fly. So if we fly for an hour, we can already charge in 40 minutes. The restriction on the charging cycle is heat. The more power you put in, the more heat you generate, and the batteries have to be kept within a certain level, otherwise it could damage the batteries. So with battery improvements progressing so slowly, there's only one way to do it, and that is to keep the batteries cooler. So we're currently looking at an engineering different approaches that will offer water-cooled batteries. The problem is that, you know, running a water-cooled system is more weight, but we're looking at the saving in charging time is worth a reduction in payload, you know, by a couple of kilograms.
And you'd be really increasing utilization by a fairly large factor.
Well, at the moment, we can charge in 40 minutes. If it's really, really cold or really, really hot, and we're talking extremes that most people wouldn't want to go flying in, the battery charging cycle extends. So it might go from, say, in Australia, where we get up to 40 degrees Celsius, it might go from 40 minutes charging to an hour, hour and 10 minutes, because it has to slow the charging process down. But with a water-cooled system, we can more rapidly dissipate the heat, and we'll keep the temperatures lower. It won't overheat the batteries, and we can just keep pumping electricity in.
Now, we've got six alpha electrodes in the U.S., and there are others in other parts of the world, and I believe the factory told me the capacity, production capacity, is getting up towards 60 airplanes a year at least. Where are they elsewhere, and how are they being used?
A lot of them are in Europe. I would say probably half of them are owned by individuals who are just technology innovators. You know, they drive a Tesla, their house has got solar panels, they just want the latest, greatest electric thing. And the other half are flying schools and other government or commercial groups that are wanting to use them for different purposes, like flight training, low noise, because the actual noise from electric aircraft is probably a quarter of that from a gasoline aircraft, especially when you compare it to something like a Cessna.
Let me ask you this. You've been selling these things. You have experience with electric aircraft. What do you think is the tipping point for sales volume on the ability to utilize these things? And I guess what I'm asking is what kind of endurance becomes, what does endurance has to get to before people say, no, I'm not interested. Yeah, now I'm interested because it has more endurance.
I really think you've got to get to at least 3 hours to be an aircraft that would appeal to the general public. To a flying school where they're not leaving the circuit, electric aircraft is perfect, because at the moment you've got an hour's endurance, and a student can normally only take an hour or a bit under in their first sort of 10 or 15, 20 hours, and that's where electric seems to be suited at the moment. Sometime in the future, when we can get batteries to, you know, 3 hours endurance, or we run little hybrid systems, as I mentioned earlier, then we'll get aircraft that are really suitable to general pilots. But at the moment, I think we're really restricted to flying operations, because the hours endurance isn't enough for most people who want to get out, go flying to a friend's place, and then need to get home without recharging.
Probably the ecosystem will evolve to both hybrids and just battery, but which do you think will get there first?
I personally think hybrid will get there first. I did my own sort of independent research, using Google, of course, and came up with battery increasing development of about 8% a year. So if you look at that, you know, over 10 years, that's great. But if you look at it over the next 1 or 2 years, it means an aircraft like the Alpha, instead of doing 15 circuits in an hour, it's only going to do 16. So the reach of battery improvements is not going to be something that happens so quickly. Every day we hear about this new latest greatest battery, but very rarely does anything, you know, come out that's going to take over the industry like they all promise. So we've got to look at better utilisation by decreasing the charging times, getting it down from, in our case, 40 minutes to, say, 20 minutes, because that's really a realistic point for an operation.
Yeah, from an operational point of view, it's almost doubling battery capacity, in a sense.
In a sense, yes. Because by the time you land, you plug it in, and then you go and get rid of your student, sign him off and take his money, put the new one in, and you're right to go.
Let me ask you about your opinion on what the initial practical hybrid form would take.
It's probably going to be a bigger aircraft than an LSA, because it needs to carry an aircraft engine and battery supply, so probably a four-seater.
So I looked at the Pantera hybrid, which was just a kind of proof of concept. You think it would look like that?
I believe so, initially, yes.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Michael Coase. I appreciate the update, and we'll look forward to more interesting developments from Pipistrel.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Paul Bertarelli reporting from AirVenture 2018. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to AvWeb's audio coverage of AirVenture 2018. AvWeb.com, world's premier independent aviation news resource.